This is episode 11 of the Cowcast, Wizard World Chicago Recap.
All right, we're going to do a quick morning recap of the first day at Wizard World Chicago. And who do we have with us today? I am James, obviously, and you are?
This is Kenton.
This is Kevin.
So we have been to Wizard World before, but Kevin, this is your first year here. What were you expecting before you came?
I was expecting a lot of different vendors, hopefully to see some artists and writers and some fun stuff.
Okay. Well, obviously we know what to expect, having been here before. This is my 25th year going to this particular show. I've been coming since the early 90s, and the show has changed a lot. It's gone from being a very creator-driven show and publisher-driven show to being more of, I would say, one of the strongest vendor shows in the country as far as just the sheer amount of back issues to dig through. Although the biggest shift that I have seen has been certainly the loss of the publishers and creators. DC, Marvel, all used to have a pretty heavy presence at this show.
Right.
They are gone. They have not been here for years. I remember years ago, back in the 90s, when they would have, everybody was here. They had a giant Image booth. I remember Todd McFarlane had like the giant Spawn car, and there was just a huge like Spawn booth, and it used to be a really, really cool event to see and meet a lot of creators and see a lot of publishers and see some, you know, upcoming previews of books coming out and things like that. Of course, now we have the internet for that. So it's, you know, what are they going to do? Debut a couple pages here or something?
Takes excitement out.
Right. But I think more than anything, the biggest change too has been that it's sort of been infiltrated by a lot of junk dealers. There's a lot of people selling jewelry and
swords. You see a lot of those.
Yeah, a lot of swords and stuff like that.
Comic related items or fandom items.
Exactly. Walking through Artist Alley, there are not a lot of people in Artist Alley that you would recognize. It's a lot of people selling prints. It's a lot of people selling, we said jewelry, selling like little sculptures made out of like scrap metal and stuff. And it's cool stuff, but it seems like something that would be more fitting, I don't know, for like a, you know, a flea market or something. Or like a local fair.
Yeah, a craft fair or something.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not going to come here and get what you're getting at San Diego or at C2E2. It's a lot different. That being said, the positives, obviously, like we said, the vendors. There's just an incredible amount of vendors to dig through. Less cheap books than there used to be, though. You used to walk around and there'd be a lot of booths that were $4 for $1 books and things like that. I don't really have the time to dig through a lot of $4 for $1 books anymore, but just as an observation, there's a lot less of those. What you tend to see are, instead of the random boxes of quarter books now, it's a lot of random boxes of $2 books. So whether that's just inflation or who knows what, the general price of digging through cheap books has certainly gone up over the last 10 years as well.
I know, so we were able to find some dollar books, but they're all just rough shape, not bagged and boarded at all.
Yeah.
And just rough. And that's really the lowest price we've been able to see for anything.
The box of dollar books I saw, it was all yellowed, every one in there, and kind of the same yellow tint to the pages.
Yeah, you can find, there's still deals to be found. There's no doubt about it, but you really have to be willing to dig. And most of the people, I think a good chunk of the people that are here are happy to dig. I would say that there's a good chunk of people that are here, not necessarily because they want to buy comics, but just because of pop culture. A lot of the cosplayers, a lot of the people that are here because they would watch The Big Bang Theory or something and they want to go to a Comic-Con, you know. So you don't necessarily have people like that are digging through bins, they're more interested in the autograph section, going into the second hall and, you know, paying $40 to get their picture taken with. Who did you want to get your picture taken with, Kevin?
It was John Bassman. Or not, no,
John Barrowman?
Yeah, John Barrowman. Michael J. Fox. Who else do they have? Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, they've got the whole X-Files cast and Ralph Macchio.
Yep.
John Cena. Yeah, John Cena's not here. No, it's you were just talking about John Cena.
Yeah.
But he's not here.
I wish he was.
Yeah.
Just want to set the record straight. Yes, John Cena was at Wizard World Chicago. He was there for a short signing time slot later in the weekend. Kevin was right that he did see a sign that said John Cena would be there. So just wanted to make sure we clarified that. Back to the show.
But anyways, so there's a big pop culture autograph area, but there's not any... I think that's where a lot of people tend to gravitate towards. There's that. There's an entire video game hall where you can go in and you can play arcades, and they have like a Smash Brothers tournament, things like that. So it's certainly leaning more towards being kind of an all-encompassing pop culture show, which I think Wizard is billing it as. You know, it's no longer the Chicago Comic Con that it used to be. It's Wizard World Chicago, and it's all things pop culture. As far as comic book creators go, though, we've seen the normal guys that are on the Wizard World circuit. Michael Golden, Arthur Soydum, I think is how you pronounce it, the guy who did all the Marvel Zombie covers.
Mm-hmm.
He is here. James O'Barr, he's been at every Wizard show I've been at. It's a lot of those guys that are at every Wizard show. And then... again, as you go through the Artist Alley, the further back you get, the less you recognize people. And there's always the thing where you say, you try not to make eye contact with like the guy who has a really, really badly drawn Joker in a Star Trek outfit print. And he goes, "Hey, have you heard of?" Because if you make eye contact, they'll say, "Have you heard about my? Have you heard about my comic called, Joker Academy or something?" And well, obviously, you haven't heard about his comic called Joker Academy, so you're like, "No."
No one has.
And now, because you haven't heard about it, he's like, "Well, let me tell you about it." And you're like, here's 5 minutes." So with Artist Alley, we always try not to make eye contact.
Keep your head down
unless you actually want to talk to the person. That being said, there are some really talented people in there with some original art and cool original prints. We saw one guy who did this sort of minimalistic movie posters of horror movies, everything from The Shining to Evil Dead to The Thing and stuff. And those looked really, really cool. So I might go back and pick up a few of those. So every once in a while you get kind of find a diamond in the rough there.
Someone gets discovered.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I guess the kind of stereotype of Artist Alley here being a bunch of people that rip images off of DeviantArt and go to Kinko's and print out 11x17s, it kind of holds true for a good chunk of it. So we didn't spend a lot of time in Artist Alley, needless to say. And yesterday, Thursday being the first night, it only runs from 3 to 8. So we didn't spend a lot of time being too focused on anything. We went around and talked to some of the vendors that we knew, and that was pretty much it. Kind of gave Kevin a lay of the land since he had never been here before. But now, Kevin, as the new guy, having been here for a day, what are you looking forward to doing today, tomorrow, Sunday?
Just continue to dig through some back issues. See if I can find some stuff to bring home. Probably not any prints, but maybe some, like a coffee mug or two or a t-shirt. But mostly just trying to dig through some print or some back issues and try to find something. Mostly Kirby, if not just something that I can, sell at some point later in life and make some money off of it. Or at least collect it and say, hey, I was able to get this first issue of whatever and,
mm-hmm.
Pass that down to my future children.
How would you say the prices have been here on anything not in the dollar bins that we've been talking about?
Just ridiculously high. I mean, you saw the first Carnage. I think it's Amazing Spider-Man 361.
Yep.
Is going a 9.8 is going for $500 here.
We talked about that in our San Diego podcast. That and I might be the same vendor. That there was the same guy in San Diego that had that 361 and 9.8 for $500, and we've got the same book on the shelf for $250. I said when we were doing our San Diego coverage, I said they'll probably sell it. I guess they didn't.
And it's, I mean, it's surprising. I saw just random Silver Age Shazams for $50, $60 that I bought for $5 or $3.
Out of the Cowabunga Comics bin?
Yes.
There you go.
That it's just, it's not a special issue. I mean, it's, you know, 70s or 80s Shazam or whatever. And it's, you know, just overpriced. I think the best booth that I found is Hauser's booth. But that's just stuff I can get at any, you know, comic show in the Milwaukee area. And it's mostly, most of it's just old and in rough shape or, you know, old and collectible, but I just don't have the money or the want to buy any of it. The real shift that I've seen is I just continue to see guys that are our age and older digging through the comics. You don't really see any younger, you know, maybe kids in high school or middle school, even elementary school, you know, parents buying their kids' comics. You see them here, and they're dressed up, and they're all into the cosplay, and they're into getting T-shirts and, you know, pops and Funko pops, but it's you don't see that second or the next coming generation of comic book collectors, it seems.
Well, that's a good observation with the Funko pops, because obviously Funko pops are ubiquitous at any show that you go to, and there are there are tons of just exclusively Funko pop vendors here. And we're talking some of these booths that are, what'd you say, 20 feet long?
Yeah.
It's just Funko Pops?
Giant, yeah.
Yeah, they're just huge. But they always have a big crowd of people around them. Also, T-shirts, there's always a lot of big T-shirt vendors. I think the kind of gimmicky niche T-shirts are certainly a top seller at shows like this, and mostly for the reason that you said, the pop culture people that are here that aren't digging through comics, but they're here because they like Harley Quinn or they like Firefly or something like that. And they want to come and they want to spend money on something. So they'll go to the T-shirt booth and they'll buy a Firefly T-shirt and then they'll buy a Firefly Funko Pop. And then they'll walk around an artist alley and buy this guy's print of Jane Cobb, you know? So there's certainly money to be made if you're not a comics dealer. You just have to make sure that you've got the right market. On the subject of people watching, though, the biggest thing that I noticed was this is the most sparsely attended Thursday that I have ever seen here since they started doing Thursday. Because for for most of the time that I was coming here, it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I think they must have added the Thursday maybe a decade ago, eight or 9 years ago, maybe. And Thursday tended to be very much like the first day at San Diego, only a little bit more tempered, because at San Diego you have, of course, actual companies with a lot of exclusive items, exclusive comics, exclusive toys, what have you. At Wizard World Chicago, you don't really have that. It's more people that want to come in and get the best deals from vendors that first day. I talked to one guy who is a vendor that I know pretty well from around the Milwaukee area, and he says that he only goes to the show on Thursdays. And he just buys books on Thursdays, and he'll take them back and put them out at the next couple of local shows and hopefully sell through them and make some money. But he said that as a reseller, he doesn't see any value in sticking around for the rest of the weekend after Thursday, which I thought was eye-opening in the way that it's perceived by a lot of other dealers, that if you're not selling here and you're just coming to buy, just come Thursday. I don't necessarily agree with that, because I know he's buying more high dollar keys to turn around and try to make, you know, a real, real nice turnaround on, whereas I can dig through and find you know, dollar books that I'll put out for $2 that I know I'll sell. And so for me, it's worth it in the long run, having a store to put them out at. But again, that being said, this, I have never seen it this sparsely attended. The another thing I noticed was that the aisles were seemed a lot wider, the widest aisles I've ever seen. I don't know why that is. We did see that they had opened up a kind of a back section for the artist alley that I had never seen open before at the show in the room that it was in. I think they used to just have one of those big cloth walls there, but now it's open and they have, would you say, three or four rows more of tables back there?
Yeah, something like that.
So it's, yeah, it's bigger in a way, but it also seems a little bit, even though I think it, size-wise, it's bigger. It seems like a bit of a smaller con than in the last couple of years. And Saturday, of course, is going to be, just to touch back on what you said with not seeing a lot of younger collectors. Saturday is the day that you're going to see those people here primarily, when there's not school going on or whatever. But you'll also see, if the vendors are smart, and you certainly see this in San Diego and you see it at C2E2, where they will change their, they'll take down the 70s Shazams that you're talking about that they have up for $50. And they have those up on Thursday and Friday, but then Saturday they take those down and they put them in a box, and they take the Deadpool and the Harley Quinn and they put that up on their back wall, because you get those people that aren't collectors, but they're going to be impulse buyers. And they're going to come in and walk around, and after they buy the t-shirt and the Funko Pop, they're going to say, there's a Harley Quinn comic for $25 and it looks cool. I don't know anything about it. I don't know what issue it is, what it's from, where it falls in a story, but it's a $25 Harley Quinn book and I'll buy it.
Or Star Wars reprints.
Yeah, exactly. I think there are certainly, now you mentioned Hauser, obviously he's always got a lot of good prices and cool books. And there are a lot of other guys that have a lot of really good deals. You do get the vendors too that prey on people that have no idea what they're doing, and if they can make money that way, more power to them. But you just got to be discerning when you come to a show like this and have a good idea of what the product that you're spending money on is worth, you know, and make sure that you're not getting fleeced if you are not that hardcore into comics. You want to make sure that you're not pissing away $25 on that Harley Quinn book that you can go anywhere else and get for $5, you know, just because you're here at a show with your girlfriend who's dressed like Harley Quinn. Kent, did you have any observations?
I found that there's a definite lack of the 25-cent, 50-cent comic book bins like I used to see. Those are my favorite to kind of rifle through. I'm always looking for the 80s, 90s, early Viz translations of some Japanese comics that they put out.
We did see that Robotech piece of art.
Yes, that was something that stood out to me. Yep. It looked like something from the 80s Robotech comics, and the original ink drawing that they used for the comics.
Yeah, it was original art page.
So I'm always looking for unusual things like that, rarities that just don't come out and you don't see in the stores anymore. So I haven't found anything too exciting besides that Robotech print, but I'll keep looking.
Another thing to touch on, there were a lot of video game dealers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Definitely a lot more than previous years. There were people that had a whole table filled with old games on them.
Right.
And some of those reproduction systems like the Famiclones, those kinds of things that will play old cartridges.
Sure.
So that seems to be really coming back.
The Superboy, they had the portable Super Nintendo handheld.
Yes, yeah, they had that one. They had ones that would play NES, Super NES, Genesis, a couple of old machines for sale. They were selling Genesis, Sega CD collections, I think, are for $100 or something like that. So
yeah,
$80 for a Nintendo Entertainment System, the original toaster style one. So I can see that the market is really starting to, I don't know if it's approaching a bubble at this point. It seems like things have gotten a lot more expensive than just a few years ago for those same items.
The video game and comic crossover event that happened yesterday was one of the few Sega CD games that I have left for my collection is Popful Mail. And there was a guy that had one for $200, and I asked if I could take a look at it. And it was missing the mail-in card, but the disc and the manual itself looked to be in good shape. But when I turned it over, it looked like the back insert had water damage. So I asked the guy if there had been water damage to it, and he said, "Oh, I think it's just wavy." I said, "Well, it's wavy, but it looks like there might have been water damage or moisture that got in there or something." And he took it out. He took the back insert out, and he looked at the other guy, and he's like, "We could take it back and just press it." And I thought, well, I guess that's sort of that's sort of your intersection there of comic pressing in video games. So he did not accept my lower offer on it, but we of course have a little bit of video game insight, having had a past video game podcast.
Yes,
called
Well Versed in the Classics,
which you can find and listen to and get our insights on all sorts of gaming. But anyways, yeah, the video game section definitely has, it almost seems exponential. I remember a couple of years ago when you'd find one guy that had like a little table with some video games, but it was mostly comics and toys. And now there's probably 9 or 10 different tables just are selling video games.
And some look like they are used game shops that have a table.
Sure.
They have big banners and websites they must be selling through on the internet too.
Absolutely. I guess the last thing that we can kind of talk about that is sort of an irregularity at shows like this is I know that at some point there are always like these standby fillers if there are tables left over, where they'll go to like the colleges that are like the 3D computer colleges or something that you
our
see
schools.
The terrible
mm-hmm.
yeah the terrible ads for on TV where they show the two guys sitting in the chairs and they're like, "I wish I could design a video game," or something like that, you know. There's
getting up the graphics on level 3.
Right. Like, yeah, that's the one. They have a booth for LASIK. There was a big Windows and siding booth that seemed a little bit out of place.
They had the Army booth where you could sign up to join the Army, and I thought that's really, you know, this is a great place. You know, a lot of unathletic fat guys that are digging through comic bins are.
Well, tell them about what they had there to see if like if you could
they
do
had,
it.
Like, the sit up bar or
pull up bar,
and you know, one of the Army guys just looked at me and kind of just looked at me for a second, and then just kind of like shook his head. And I probably thought he was thinking just like
death of a nation.
Yeah, he just looked at me and was like, "Nope, you're not going to even want to look at us. Just keep on walking."
Yeah,
but you know, it's. Yeah, interesting. Like, I think I saw a State Farm insurance table, which is interesting.
I'm
like,
sure
what are they going to do? Yeah,
yeah.
And put, you know, policies on your comics.
Well, let's talk about the Six Flags booth. They had a Six Flags booth. Now, they obviously were pushing for Fright Fest, right?
Their Halloween theme. The people are dressed in costumes, and they dress up the park like it's a haunted house.
But they had this picture of a guy who it looked like he was kind of yelling, but he just had blood on his face. And it's a Six Flags Great America, and there's this guy with blood. And he doesn't look like a zombie or anything. He doesn't say Fright Fest. So I went up to the woman at the booth, and I said, "Did that guy fall out of a roller coaster or something?" She's like, "No, we don't have accidents."
He looked injured.
He did. It was not well planned. Whoever put together the Six Flags booth, You may want to address that in take a zombie filter in Photoshop to the guy or something.
The other pictures are fine, but just that one didn't look scary. It just looked like he was hurt,
and that's never good. But that's pretty much it for the coverage and observations of the first day. We will be back later with some more updates, but we're gonna get going and hit the con. We'll talk to you later. Let's start with our second day of coverage for Wizard World Chicago 2016, which is actually going to be covering Friday and Saturday. We have not gone to the show on Sunday yet. It is Sunday morning right now, but let's give our impressions of the last 2 days of the show since we have been there. Start, Kevin?
Well, it's been very similar to our previous podcast. What you'll hear is that a lot of vendors with pop culture. We did see some vendors that are, what would you say, stealing or copying?
Yeah, there's always the crowd that is selling the 11 by 17 prints, as we mentioned before. And a lot of times you end up getting, you get people that, you'll have people that do their own artwork, but then you'll have people that will steal other people's artwork and hope no one notices. And it's a pretty widespread practice. And we have, just in the past 2 days from being here, I'm going to grab my phone. There are already 3 different vendors that have been accused of plagiarism. And one of them is apparently some woman named Ginger Zaps. And I guess Ryan Otley had served her with a cease and desist at a different show. And now she's here. And so there's a bunch of people that aren't happy about that. Some guy named Carolina Ghostbusters, I guess, have been accused of stealing some work. And there's another guy named John Powers who has been accused of stealing some work as well. So it's always interesting to be here while that stuff is kind of developing, because I think it casts a very bad shadow on the whole show, you know, because Wizard World right now is fighting an uphill battle not to be perceived as a glorified flea market, you know. It is not, as we said, it's not what it was even 10 years ago, especially 20 years ago. It's a very different show. And it's certainly, I could not believe how many vendors we saw selling jewelry and selling
like pottery and,
yeah, and just weird gimmicks.
Handbags that just, it's not even pop culture related. It's just,
right. It's like something you'd see at the county fair or the farmer's market or something. And so I don't understand what, I guess you can, it's hard to be too picky and choosy with who's paying you to come in when there's already that idea that you're kind of struggling as a show. And I think that even though they've had incredible attendance, we've all commented this year that it's, obviously you haven't been here before, but Jake and Kent and I, we've all noticed that there's definitely the traffic seems down. The attendees seem down. You can actually, on Saturday, we could walk from one end of the hall to the other with no problem. And in years past, you couldn't do anything like that. So I don't know what the problem is. I don't know if there are less vendors. I'd be curious to see how many tables there are this year compared to 5 years ago. I know that in years past, there was less aisle space. And so if you had more people and less aisle space, obviously that's going to make it a lot harder to get through the crowds. But it just seems like everything is down. Vendors are down. Attendance is down. There's next to no comic creators here of any note. It was very disappointing. I think the Heroes Initiative booth probably had more people than all of Artist Alley that were recognizable and exciting. So it's definitely moving away from that to get back to the people that are selling the stolen artwork. I just think that's the kind of thing that puts creators off from wanting to come to a show like this. You're going to have them trying to go to just about every con, but you do not have people like that in San Diego. San Diego is very picky and choosy about who they have in the Artist Alley. It's they have a no fan art rule, and I think that's what certainly helps them have the best creator selection out of any show that I've ever been to. C2E2 doesn't really have much of that. I mean, there's a couple people there that are doing that, but it's still mostly just creators. I think C2E2 was, a lot of people thought that C2E2 was going to be huge competition for Wizard World, and I don't think it's necessarily impacted the attendance at Wizard World, but I think more than anything what it's done is it's gotten the reputation as being a creator-centric show. So creators say, I'm not going to go to Wizard World, I'm going to go to C2E2 if I'm going to do a Chicago show. And because of that, you've seen all the, there's tons of big names at C2E2, and there's again, there's next to nobody here. So I don't know what they're going to have to do. If they start kicking out a lot of the fan art people, they're going to lose half the people in their artist alley. But will they continue to hemorrhage creators if they don't do anything about it? I don't know.
Or just have like indie creators, you know, guys that are just creating basically, you know, stuff that you've never heard of. And then that just doesn't bring in many people. No one's going to want to really look at that or talk to sit there and talk to somebody who's made a comic about whatever that mm-hmm. no one really knows of. You know, at least with these prints, it's bringing in people, but it's also not bringing in artists or writers or comic creators at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we talked yesterday about the people that are just into pop culture versus the people that are into comic books. And I think that there, we saw a lot of people that would buy like a couple Funko Pops, and they would buy some of those prints from a dealer. And they don't, a lot of people just don't care. You know, they want to buy something cool to put on their wall. And they won't care if you said, hey, that guy ripped off Ryan Ottley's Invincible. Like, then just put it into a filter program on their computer and printed it out at Kinko's. They go, oh, I don't care. It looks cool. I'm going to put it up on the wall. I think that's who Wizard is sort of catering to now, is the that sort of just pop culture fan who just wants some cool stuff and doesn't really care about the origin of it or the creative side behind it, you know? So again, I don't know whether it's for better or worse for Wizard. You know, we could be saying all this negative stuff, and they could say, well, we've had record attendance this year. All right, so something's working for them then, whatever they're doing. But I think it has certainly lost the focus it had as a comic show. It is what they say it is. It's a pop culture show.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
Just being my first time here, that's how I feel. You have, you know, a board game section. You have a video game section. And, I mean, you have the Artist Alley, which is comprised of about four or five artists and writers and creators, and the rest is just, you know, the prints, which we were talking about. There's not that many comic booths, and if they are, they're, you know, diamond, you know, where it's all just stuff that backstock that they have.
There's a lot of guys that just have booths selling like diamond liquidation trades and things like that.
And I mean, most of it's just $30 or $40 higher than what you normally pay at a smaller show even. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still nice. You can still find some stuff that you are willing to, you know, pay for, but just not any keys or anything like that that you can find for cheap.
Yeah, there's a ton of keys. That's the thing. It's certainly the almost the entire industry now is going towards just being a key market. You don't really have the people that want to just fill in the 16 issues of whatever series they're missing. They just want to collect keys. And so because of that, that's what you see, is you see a lot of vendors that just have keys. And there's a lot of high dollar, high grade keys. But since they know that's what everyone is looking for, the prices on them just keep going up and up and up. We just sold a very nice Nierman copy of Secret Wars 8 out of the shop for $40. I have seen so many copies, raw, ungraded copies of that book at the show for at least $150. It blows my mind. And I don't know if anybody's paying $150 for it, but that's, you know, four times what we sell it for in the shop here. Just because it's a key Spider-Man issue. I don't know where some of this pricing comes from. There was another guy who was selling the third printing of the first appearance of Anti-Venom, some Amazing Spider-Man book in the 600s, and it's going for like $30-$35, and he had $150 on it. $150. And I just made a comment. I said, where do you get the pricing for that? And he's like, well, that's what it's going to be worth. And I thought, well, that's what it's going to be worth? You can't sit here and price your entire booth based on what something's going to be worth. So, I don't know. It's great for us having a store to have this key-driven market, but there's a lot less to dig through now, it shows. There aren't a lot of people, like we said, bringing the cheap bins to dig through. It's mostly just a lot of guys with big high-dollar books, which is neat to look at, but doesn't really lend itself to buying much.
Yeah, and you had that one booth that was just all graded books from, you know, it's all gold and silver aged. And that's great, but they didn't have, I mean, they had some keys, but it was just random books from the 50s and 60s that were graded. And you're going, okay, this is nice and all, but I don't want to pay hundreds of dollars for a random book that no one's ever really, you know, it's 50, 60 years old, and it's not going to be worth nearly that much if I try to sell it somewhere else. But
well, that, and there's a, I think there's something to be said for if you have some random issue of a Golden Age title and it grades out at a 3.5, you're, and you know, this is a whole other discussion, I think, but is it worth asking that much of a premium for it just because you got it graded? It's a 3.5, you know. Again, if it's not a key, I don't know. It looks nice in the slab, but yeah. Other than that, they have a, what's some of the other stuff they have? They have the speed, sci-fi speed dating, and they have the blood drive going on.
They have the costume contest.
The costume contest, yep. Yeah. They have a painting section where you go paint miniatures. And that's, I don't know. I mean, anything I'm missing?
I mean, just the people that, you know, cosplay, that stay in the front. I mean, that's been, I feel like that's been getting more attention than most of the, you know, like most of the show. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the crowds have just been surrounding the random cosplayers in the front, compared to you having a bunch of people at a comic booth or even some of those print booths, which has been kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, overall I would say, and I hate to say it, but I would say it's certainly been an underwhelming Wizard World. And if I had to make the call, I would say that C2E2 certainly is by, it's leaps and bounds above the show if you are a comic fan, either a collector or just a fan of the hobby in general, and you want to meet a writer or artist. If you have to prioritize between the two of them, I guess at this point I got to say go with C2E2. It's too bad because I've been coming here for a long time, but
yeah,
a little underwhelming. Kent, what are your thoughts?
On that, there's a lot less variety than in the past. One thing I saw that was a little reminiscent of past shows was there was more promotions. I think that huge Bandai Namco game selection on the second floor was calling back to years ago when they had that in the main rooms.
Yeah.
So I remember Nintendo was there. They'd have big setups with PC games and things to play.
They used to have those big trailers in there where you could go in and play all sorts of games they'd have hooked up.
Yeah, so it was kind of neat to see that brought back again. But then again, at space that could have been used for other things, probably more comics, more vendors. It seemed like that second floor up there had a couple of vendors, maybe a mm-hmm. handful, selling some game-related stuff or figures. But other than that, it, just a lot less variety than before.
Yeah, that's another thing. I think that they really need to do something about the layout and how it didn't make a lot of sense to me how some things were laid out in the first hall and in the second hall. On the first floor there, like there were some comic vendors in the second hall, or the second hall seemed to be sort of more ancillary stuff, but there were still comic vendors in there. They should have, but then you had, you know, the main hall, you had a lot of sword vendors and things like that. Why didn't they stick those guys in the other hall, concentrate the comics? That's one thing San Diego did really well, was they compartmentalized everything. And you had your, not, they didn't just assign the comic dealers to one section. They even broke it down where your silver and golden age dealers are here and your modern age dealers are here and your trade dealers are here. And I thought that was incredibly well done. With this year at Wizard World, there's stuff everywhere.
It's hodgepodge.
It's a complete hodgepodge.
And I mean, that'd be nice for people that, you know, come in and go, okay, well, you know, I'm just getting into comics. I want to get some trades. Okay, boom, right here. Here's the trades. You get there in 5 minutes instead of walking around and trying to figure out, okay, what do I want?
Mm-hmm.
Where do I find anything? There's stuff that I've looked at on buying, and I don't even remember where it is now. And it's only been a couple of days, and you're just like, well, where did I find that before, and where can I find it again? If they had a section for your comics, they had a section for your pop culture, or even take some of those guys with the prints and throw them with the pop culture stuff, and then keep your artists and creators and with the section with the comics. Like you said, I felt like the upstairs was, I feel like they had way too much room.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Even by the, where you could go get your picture taken with Carrie Fisher or whoever, there was just a giant hall that was like basically the size of all the other halls that they just had lines for and red curtain so that you couldn't see any of the celebrities, which they could have used for vendors and just made more money.
Sure. Sure. I wonder if they really need, I don't want to get too much into the inside baseball of it, but it is not cheap to get a booth here, obviously. And I wonder if Wizard needs to kind of change the approach of how they charge people to set up here and make it a little bit more affordable. And I wonder if they made it a little bit cheaper and had more specialized rates based on kind of on what you were selling, if they could get some people that would otherwise be a little bit put off by the price to maybe show up, get some new blood in here vendor-wise, because it is a lot of the same people that you see every year here and a lot of the same vendors that are at all your other, you know, Chicago kind of Midwest shows. Maybe they need to do something like that. And then they definitely need to organize better. Like we said, they got to do a much better layout, come up with some sort of logic for why a certain booth is where it is. You had, so the two grading companies, CGC and CBCS, were both there. And CGC was sort of closer when you walked in the door, and CBCS was a bit further down. I understand why they may not want to be placed right next to each other, but wouldn't you think that, like, you'd have maybe the grading companies right up front, you know, give some sort of like premier spot to that, just as a, it, because it is a service that's offered because of this convention. They're not going to benefit from it other than the booth spot that's being bought, but it's all about presentation. And that's what C2E2 and San Diego do so well. And that's what I think these guys need to start doing a lot better. Just come up with a rhyme or reason for why things are put where they're put.
Yeah. This being my first Wizard, that's exactly how I feel. And I mean, there was vendors that, okay, yeah, I can see some of your, you know, like three or four long boxes that you have out. But in order to get to the rest of your stuff, I have to squeeze myself through two booths just to get to your tables that are in some, you know, closed off area. It just didn't make sense.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk positives, though.
Okay.
Positives, because I don't know if it was less attended or if there were just more people interspersed amongst the different rooms that they had, but with the back section that they had opened up that had never been opened up before, there were new sets of bathrooms to use. This year has had the cleanest bathrooms I have ever seen at this show. In the past, I would have rather have done many things than use any of the bathrooms here at the convention center. They were just always destroyed. This year, they're fine. They're keeping up with them. There's never been a line. It's incredible. It's incredible. I guess that's my biggest positive this year.
I think another positive is that they have that skywalk.
Mm-hmm.
To get to different places, you have the skywalk, and you can get to your hotel, you know, the various hotels around. And I mean, they had check-ins where you can, you know, check your bag and you don't have to walk outside when it was raining for 2 days.
Yeah.
I think it's
important to mention another thing that this is the first year they're doing. They're having security. They're having security check-ins, and they have never, ever had that here before. You have to go through metal detectors. They have, it's just like at the airport. You can take your wallet and your keys and your phone out and put it in a little bucket. You walk through a metal detector. They look in your bag, and then somebody with a wand will scan you down and make sure that you don't have a vest bomb or something or a hidden gun, and then you can go in. But I have never seen that before, so I don't know if that is something that Wizard has instituted or something that the convention center has mandated that they have to do if they want to have a show like that, or maybe their insurance provider made them do something. Who knows? Yeah. But when I first saw it, I was a little worried. It kind of rolled my eyes. Thought, oh my God, we're just going to be, just going to be like going to the airport now to get in here. It wasn't bad. It's always been really quick.
Yeah, they were really quick, and I think that helps some of the people that are bringing their kids here have like a sense of, okay, we're secure, we're safe.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's not going to come in here and shoot up the place or something.
Sure.
Because with all the cosplay people with guns and weapons, it's kind of, I could see where parents are a little worried that, you know, whose gun is real and whose isn't. But, I mean, it wasn't bad at all.
Yeah. There, now, oddly enough, San Diego did not have that. They didn't have that at all. You walk through just the RFID thing where you had to scan your badge in and out. But they didn't have it, so I don't know. But C2E2 does. C2E2 has security. They'll do bag check, and they will, wind you down or whatever. But San Diego does it, and they obviously have a much higher attendance than either of those other shows. So kind of curious as to the reason they decided not to do it. Maybe it's just because of the sheer volume of people.
I mean, one thing that they could do that I've noticed is maybe even extend the hours of the show to the morning, just because we've just been walking around and looking at different comic vendors. And we even haven't had enough time to look at probably everything or even go to any panels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're interested in a panel and you're like, okay, well, I have to prioritize my time. But if you're interested in a bunch of panels, they're pretty jam-packed in there. And the waits, you know, the lines were pretty long. So it's
yeah.
Like, okay, well, do I sit here and waste a day with one panel? Or do I go around and check out multiple different comic vendors?
Yeah, that's what you kind of face that dilemma, I guess, at just about any convention that you can go to. But with the panels that they have here, the majority of them are panels that you will never wait in a line for. You know, the majority of them are, like, we saw one panel that was called Did Suicide Squad Really Suck or something like that. There's not going to be a line for that panel, you know. Now, the Bruce Campbell ones, yeah, there's going to be a line for that. And the Back to the Future Jason one Hughes. Or whatever, yeah. Yeah, we saw Jason Mewes staying at the Hyatt. But the ones with the bigger names and the bigger stars, there's going to be a wait for that. And I think if you buy a VIP badge, I don't know because I never have, and I've never had to, never wanted to pay extra to go see any of these people. Like, I like X-Files, but I'm not going to pay $550 to get my picture taken with the cast, you know. So I don't know if you have to stand in a big line there. We did see in the autograph section that they had two signing times. They had a VIP and then a general attendance signing time. So my guess is that VIP just gets you to the front of the line and general admission is towards the back, you know. So it probably saves you 20 minutes if you have a VIP pass. But the panels, I think they're using more rooms for panels this year than they have ever used before. Because they had almost all the rooms upstairs and downstairs were both being used for panels. Also, they used to have that Bruce Campbell's Halloween Horror Fest or whatever it was. I think that was always in the convention center. This year, it's at the Movie Co. Next door, where they're screening a lot of movies. We haven't gone to any of them. But it's kind of a neat little thing that they offer where if you have your like weekend badge that you can get into these movie screenings that they're having over there. And they're doing a lot of classics like Night of the Creeps and Return of the Living Dead. And they have a lot of the like writers and directors and actors from the movies. I know with Night of the Creeps, and I think they did Monster Squad too. They had Fred Dekker at both and some of the cast from both of those movies and some of the cast from Return of the Living Dead. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I think they were doing, like we saw William Sadler and they were doing a screening of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey and William Sadler was going to be there. And he is definitely looking old. We saw him.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't even look like himself in any of the movies.
I've always liked William Sadler. Die Hard 2 and Bill and Ted. He's in The Mist. But, yeah, so the panels, if you want to see a big name, prepare to stand in line. If you want to go to a smaller panel, you're probably set to get there 15 minutes early, honestly. But that's pretty much it. I mean, we're going to go to the last day now and hopefully find a couple of deals and call it a day. Yeah. Any closing thoughts?
I'm all set.
Awesome.
I figure I'll come next year if I can just to see what they've done, if they can improve on some of these points. Sure. I think it's always interesting to see how every year is different. Hopefully it'll keep changing for the better if they more closely observe what their competition is doing.
Yeah. Well, and I think another thing is, we have fun at the show, but we also, it's a weekend we can get away and, you know, drink beers.
Mitsuo Market and hang out and do a bunch of stuff.
Exactly. We can hang out, play board games. We met up with Chris and Sam and Jackie and we played a giant Dominion game. So you gotta make the most of it, make a weekend out of it. You know, it's not just going to a show. It's like a whole experience and, just enjoy getting away for a weekend and, even if the show is a little bit disappointing, make the most of it and have a good time. Beer certainly helps with that, too.
Yeah, the free drinks at the hotel.
Yeah.
Just make sure you go with friends.
Exactly. That's most important. Or make some friends. Well, thank you for listening to our coverage of Wizard World Chicago 2016. And we will no doubt be back next year with even more.
All right, thanks for joining us on this coverage wrap-up. You can always find us online at cowabungacomics.com. That's Cowabunga spelled with a K. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/IncrediCow or on the Twitterverse using the handle at IncrediCow. You can also send us an email with questions, thoughts, reactions to podcast@cowabungacomics.com. And as always, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will talk to you next time.